So imagine you are starting a new software company right now in 2026. And the very first thing you do, the first step your team takes, is open up a design tool to start mocking up a beautiful, intuitive user interface.
Right, which feels like the most natural thing in the world to do.
Exactly, it feels natural. But according to the materials we're looking at today, if you do that, you have already lost the race.
Yeah, it's a harsh reality to face.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are looking at this incredibly insightful architectural manifesto from Technigen. They're a software development team out in Orange County, California.
And they are making a really bold claim about how software has to be built today.
They really are. The mission of this deep dive is to explore why this concept of API-first architecture isn't just, a technical preference anymore. It is an absolute existential requirement for any scalable business right now.
Yeah, the era of the human-facing app being your main focus is, well, it's basically ending.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because, if you look at how software was built for the last 20 years, the API, the application programming interface, was just like treated as the plumbing.
Totally. It was a complete afterthought for most companies.
Right. You'd build your amazing application, make it look great, and then, I don't know, months later, you'd bolt on an ATI so maybe a third-party developer could hook into it. But Technigen is flipping that entirely on its head.
They are. Because API first means the API literally is the product.
Which means designing the application's API contracts has to happen before you write a single line of front-end code, right? Or back-end logic, for that matter.
Exactly. Before anyone touches a UI, the teams have to agree on endpoint schemas, request formats, response formats, authentication, all of it.
And everything else, like your own company's mobile app or web dashboard, is just another consumer of that one central API.
Yeah, it's an invisible product.
I mean, to use an analogy, building the UI first is basically like deciding to paint a house before you've laid the foundation, or, putting up the drywall before you've installed the plumbing.
That's a great way to put it. You're obsessing over curb appeal, but the house literally can't function.
But I want to push back on this just a bit, because if you're a startup founder listening to this right now and you're trying to get seed funding, isn't it just faster and honestly more motivating to build the visual app first?
Well, sure. Visually, it feels like progress.
Right. You want early customers and investors to actually see something, to click on something. A beautifully designed prototype gets you a Series A check. An API specification document is, well, it's a raw text file. It's not exactly sexy.
I hear you. And, that was the traditional Silicon Valley playbook for a very long time. You build a mock-up, you fake the back end, you get the funding.
Exactly.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, the way software is consumed has fundamentally changed in the 2026 AI era. The visual app is no longer the primary goal because, well, humans are no longer the primary consumers of your software.
Wow. Okay, that is a massive shift. So we are building software for machines first, humans second.
We have to. I mean, modern SaaS products today have to constantly expose functionality to AI agents, orchestration layers, massive platforms like Zapier or
Well,
Make.
because AI is doing the heavy lifting now.
Exactly. Think about AI copilots, tools like GitHub Copilot or Cursor. These LLM integrations literally generate exponentially better code when they have a highly structured, well-defined API schema to read.
Oh, because if your API is documented cleanly, the AI agent can just scan it and instantly know how to pull your data.
Yes. But if it's a messy, undocumented afterthought,
The AI hallucinates.
it hallucinates, it fails, and the developer using that AI just gets frustrated, abandons your tool, and moves to your competitor.
That makes total sense. So frictionless machine-to-machine interaction is basically the new baseline.
It is. And it heavily impacts the enterprise sales process, too. Enterprise clients aren't waiting until after a sale to ask for API docs anymore.
Really? They want them up front.
Oh, absolutely. They require them during the initial vendor evaluation phase. If your product can't be consumed programmatically, it is bypassed entirely.
So, okay, imagine you're in a bake-off against a competitor for some massive enterprise contract. Your competitor hands the buyer an interactive API specification that their internal AI can test instantly.
Right.
And you hand them like a PDF with nice screenshots of your dashboard. You lose the deal before you even get to pitch.
You lose immediately. Because to that enterprise buyer, their whole ecosystem is built on complex microservices. If they can't mathematically prove your software fits into their serverless architecture, your pretty UI gives them zero value.
Wow. Okay, so if the stakes are that high and AI and enterprise buyers are demanding this, we need to know exactly how to build it.
We do. We need a blueprint.
Right. So let's talk about how a team actually breaks out of this UI-first trap. Technigian lays out five core pillars for this 2026 architecture, starting with the contract.
Yeah, contract first is the absolute bedrock of this approach.
And they specify using OpenAPI 3.1 as that contract, right?
Exactly. OpenAPI 3.1 is the absolute source of truth for everyone. And I mean everyone, including the AI agents.
So before any developer opens a code editor, the whole team agrees on this one specification document.
Yes, it dictates every endpoint, what data is required, what the response will look like. It removes all the guesswork.
So a front-end dev in New York and a back-end dev in London don't need a massive Zoom meeting to figure out what a user profile object looks like. They just check the spec.
Exactly. It's the law of the land. But once you write that law, you immediately have to plan for how to change it.
Which brings us to the second pillar, versioning. And this is a trap that catches so many growing companies.
That's a huge trap. You launch a public API, your customers integrate it, and then 6 months later, your product team decides to just tweak a data structure.
And if you don't have a versioning strategy, pushing that update instantly breaks the software of every single customer relying on you.
It's a fantastic way to destroy trust overnight. So you need a strategy from day one. And the blueprint suggests a twofold approach.
Okay, let's break that down.
On the public-facing side, you use simple URL-based versioning.
Right. So when a customer makes an API call, the web address literally has like /v1/ in it. It's super explicit.
Exactly. But internally, for your own engineering teams, you use semantic versioning.
Right. Semantic versioning. That's the classic three-number system, like 1.0.0.
Yep. Major, minor, and patch.
So if you fix a tiny bug, you bump the patch number. If you add a feature that doesn't break anything, you bump the minor number in the middle. But if you make a breaking change, you have to bump the major number.
Exactly. It acts as a universal warning system for developers and AI agents.
Okay, so we've got an ironclad contract and a safe way to update it. But here's where it gets really interesting, and this is huge for anyone listening who is building a startup.
Oh, the security piece.
Yes, specifically authentication and role-based access control, or RBAC. The source issues a very stark warning here about technical debt.
They do. They argue that ignoring role-based access at the API layer creates a security technical debt that literally kills SaaS companies at Series B.
That is a wild claim, but I guess the startup graveyard backs it up. So why Series B?
Because that's the growth stage where you stop selling to, early adopters and you start trying to land heavily regulated enterprise clients.
Ah, like banks, healthcare providers, government contractors.
Exactly. And those clients demand rigorous third-party security audits.
So imagine building this thriving startup. You're about to close a $50 million Series B, the auditors come in, and the whole thing implodes because your foundational security was basically just glued onto the visual application layer.
Right. It was an afterthought. And if your security is tied to the UI, what happens when a machine-to-machine AI agent tries to pull data directly from the API?
The security model completely falls apart.
Exactly. You have to build role-based access control directly into the API endpoints. That way, security is guaranteed no matter who or what is calling for the data.
The blueprint is really specific about how to do this too. For user integrations, it mandates OAuth 2.0 with PKCE.
Yeah, OAuth is standard, but PKCE proof key for code exchange is crucial here.
How does PKCE actually secure the transaction?
Think of it like a highly secure coat check at a club.
Okay, I like this.
When you hand the attendant your coat, you don't just get a generic numbered ticket that anyone could steal. Instead, you and the attendant agree on a secret cryptographic handshake right then and there.
Oh, wow. So when you come back to get your coat or your access token, you have to prove you know that secret handshake.
Exactly. So even if someone intercepts your request, they can't get the token because they don't know the secret handshake.
That is brilliant. But what about machine-to-machine communication, where there's no human logging in at all?
For that, you use scoped API keys. An AI agent shouldn't have God mode access to your whole database.
Right. It just needs keys to the specific endpoints it's supposed to use.
Exactly. Which naturally brings up the issue of volume and rate limiting.
Yeah, because if we are handing out keys to AI agents, what happens if an authorized machine just goes haywire?
Like a bad script bombarding you with 10,000 requests a second.
Exactly. How do you stop your platform from crashing?
You have to enforce rate limits at the gateway layer, not the application layer. Tools like Kong or AWS API Gateway.
It's like a bouncer at the front door of a club, right? The bouncer handles the traffic before anyone even gets inside to bother the bartenders.
That's a perfect analogy. And they use algorithms like the token bucket to manage it.
Right. Imagine a literal bucket for each AI agent, holding a set number of tokens. Every request pulls a token out.
And the system refills the bucket at a steady rate. If an agent empties its bucket with a burst of requests, the gateway just denies them until it refills.
It's such an elegant way to prevent server meltdowns.
And enterprise buyers actually demand to see those rate limits documented before they sign.
Okay, so we've secured the door, we're managing traffic. But once all these machines are inside, how do we know what they're doing?
That brings us to the final pillar, observability.
And we're not just talking about checking if the server is plugged in, right?
No, we're talking about structured logging and distributed tracing using tools like OpenTelemetry.
Because in modern architecture, a single request might bounce across 20 different microservices. Finding a bug is like finding a needle in a haystack.
Right. But OpenTelemetry attaches what is basically a tracking number to every piece of data. You can trace its exact journey millisecond by millisecond.
That makes debugging so much easier. But the source makes another point about this data that I thought was brilliant.
Oh, about the product roadmap.
Yes. They argue that API analytics should actually dictate your product roadmap.
It makes perfect sense. If your telemetry data shows that 90% of your machine traffic is hitting one specific endpoint,
while some flashy UI feature you spent months on gets zero traffic,
then the analytics are objectively telling you where to spend your engineering budget. You don't have to guess.
The machines literally tell you what's valuable.
Exactly.
So, okay, we've mapped out this massive operational shift. Contract first, strict versioning, gateway security, intelligent rate limiting, deep observability.
It is a lot of rigorous work up front.
And if you're an engineering lead listening to this, you might be thinking, this sounds like a huge headache. So let's talk about the business reality.
The bottom line.
Right. What happens to the companies that just stubbornly keep building API last?
The hidden costs are staggering.
Yeah.
And they compound. Companies that build UI first end up spending 40 to 60% of their engineering capacity on integration work that shouldn't even exist.
Wait, let me just emphasize that. Up to 60% of a highly paid engineering team's time is wasted retrofitting APIs.
Yes. They spend 3 to 6 months tearing up the floorboards of their app just to meet some enterprise buyer's sudden demands.
Half the company is stuck doing renovations instead of building new features.
And it causes massive internal bottlenecks. Think about mobile app development.
Oh, right. The mobile team needs a new data endpoint, so they submit a ticket to the backend team.
And they wait weeks for it. Then they hope it actually works. It's just endless ticket ping pong.
Plus, trying to onboard new engineers with undocumented internal APIs must be a nightmare.
It takes twice as long. They spend their first month just guessing how systems talk to each other through trial and error.
What's fascinating here is that the solution to all this friction comes down to developer experience, or DX.
Yes, DX is everything. If the API is the product, then developers and AI agents are your end users. Their experience has to be flawless.
And the cornerstone of that is living documentation.
Right. Tools like RedHawk or Stoplight, they take that open API specification we talked about and auto-generate beautiful interactive documentation.
Because it's auto-generated from the code, it's never out of date. And the ROI on this is wild. The source says it reduces customer support tickets by 30 to 40%.
Because developers can test endpoints right in the browser. They solve their own problems.
Okay, so to get this level of polish, the modern 2026 tech stack needs a few specific tools. We mentioned gateways. What about contract testing?
Contract testing is huge. Tools like Pact.
How is that different from normal software testing?
Normal unit testing just checks if one piece of code works in isolation. Contract testing checks the seam between two systems.
Ah, so it makes sure the agreement between the provider and the consumer is actually honored.
Exactly. It prevents the back-end team from accidentally deploying a change that breaks the front end.
You combine that with a sandbox environment full of mock data, and you offer client SDKs, software development kits in Python and JavaScript.
Right. An SDK gives developers a pre-built toolkit so they don't have to write boilerplate code. They just start building immediately.
And these aren't premium features anymore, right? They are baseline expectations.
Oh, absolutely. If you don't have an SDK, enterprise teams won't even evaluate you.
So let's look at how Technegian pulls all this together into a daily workflow that actually eliminates that whole ticket ping pong nightmare.
It starts with discovery. They map out all the business capabilities before any design happens.
Then the specification phase. Everyone signs off on the OpenAPI 3.1 spec.
Yes. And then comes the real game changer. deploying a mock server.
Right, because you have the spec, you can instantly spin up a fake version of the API.
Which means your front-end teams, your mobile teams, they can all start building against this fake back-end immediately.
In
parallel.
Nobody is sitting around waiting for the back-end team to finish the database logic.
Exactly. And while the front-end builds, the back-end uses test-driven development. They write the contract tests first to ensure their code perfectly matches the spec.
And then, crucially, they ship the documentation portal alongside the API release, never weeks later.
Day one. It has to be there on day one.
That synchronized workflow is brilliant.
Yeah.
It completely cures the engineering waste of API last companies.
It really does. It forces the whole organization to align around one machine-readable source of truth.
So synthesizing all of this, we have really moved from this old world where picking colors and designing pretty interfaces was the main event.
Yep, that era is over.
We are in a rigorous foundation-first reality now. The API is the ultimate product. It dictates your security, your scalability, and whether you can even survive in the enterprise market.
And most importantly, it dictates your ability to exist in the AI ecosystem.
Absolutely. The stakes are incredibly high, whether you're an engineer, a product manager, or a founder trying to survive a Series B audit. API-first architecture is mandatory in 2026.
You can't just paint the walls and hope the plumbing fixes itself later.
You really can't.
You know, looking ahead, this whole shift toward machine-to-machine consumption raises a really fascinating question.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if AI agents and LLMs are rapidly becoming the primary consumers of SaaS platforms, and they require these rigid API contracts to function, will we soon see successful companies that just completely abandon graphical interfaces?
Wait, really? Just no UI at all?
Yeah. Imagine a startup offering absolutely nothing but an invisible machine-to-machine API. No dashboard, no login screen, no buttons. Just an invisible foundation that scales into a billion-dollar product.
That is a wild thought to leave on. A billion-dollar company with literally nothing to look at. Definitely something to ponder the next time you're tempted to start a project by opening a design tool. Thanks for joining us, and we will catch you next time on The Deep Dive.